You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we're talking about how the coronavirus is revealing breakdowns and lack of resilience in our food supply systems. So today we ask, which links in the chain are broken? Rather than fixing them, what are new and better choices for us in how we bring food from soil to savory, healthy eating? Glad you're with us for this path forward amid the coronavirus pandemic. Greetings, Lee, from Sioux City, Iowa, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. And before we get into today's episode, I just want to make note of what's all going on this day. I mean, not only has our country passed 103,000 deaths from COVID-19, with many more to come in the next weeks ahead. Just an incredible amount of suffering, loss, and grief. Just want to take note of that, because there's so much talk about getting beyond this, and it's just with us, and we're in the middle of it, and it's very difficult for many people, less so for others, but for people risking their lives, for people who are losing someone and having a hard time processing grief, it's just something we need to acknowledge here as we make this podcast episode. And then the second thing is that African Americans are in revolt in this country and many cities for the police lynchings that continue to go on. And getting a hold of this thing, you know, with a whole new way forward is essential, and it doesn't yet appear exactly how that's going to happen, but we can't. More of the same is just intolerable for any white person, African-American person, or person of any color. That's going on as we make this podcast episode.
Sobering indeed, Lee. Yes. Well, this is the third successive podcast episode in the midst of the global coronavirus pandemic. By the end of May, over 100,000 people have died in the U.S., a horrific emotional and spiritual wrenching of lives. Hundreds of thousands of people across the nation are hurting and grieving. Surely this experience of death and suffering, the largest in our lifetimes, is released the commitment to new life in enough of us to take leaps in the direction of change, the changes that our planet says we must make in this decade of the 2020s. Not to do so will form calluses on our souls and decay in who we are.
Well, in this episode, we focus the changes we need to make in how we grow and get our food, what we call the food supply system. It's kind of a bureaucratic sounding name, but it's just how we get our food from a seed in the field or the garden into the people who eat it. Well, COVID-19 abruptly stopped the fragile system we've been depending on for decades. Fields of delicious strawberries, I love them, have been plowed under because the fruit could not be connected to the eaters. And likewise, you've probably read the stories of dairy farmers who've dumped the milk from their cows and pigs and chickens that were being gassed to death because the market system had completely broken down, as had the delivery system. Meanwhile, food banks haven't been able to meet demand. A tiny virus has ripped open the vulnerabilities of an acutely inadequate system of delivering food. The system that's broken down in these weeks is driven by industrial agriculture, by global markets, by trade breakdowns and corporate control. I want to emphasize this, that it's a system in the control of these entities. It's not the only system we can have, but but that's the system that we currently are living with. And then just in the last day or two, the U.S. Census Bureau, who comes out with weekly reports, has reported that at least 9 million U.S. households with children are not at all confident they'll be able to afford this coming month of June. Well, in 2 days, rent is due, and people are going to be making decisions between rent and food. This is really an intolerable situation in a country of the kind of wealth that we have accumulated in certain spots. Terrible distribution and sharing of wealth is the hallmark right now of this society. So with that kind of statistic, 9 million U.S. households with children, not sure that they'll have be able to get to the end of the month with food. That's where we are as we proceed into this episode. Take us into it, Jerry.
Yes, we want to share with you some excellent sources that, first, explain the breakdown, and second, help us identify the systems we need going forward. Our first source is Richard Heinberg. I interviewed Richard for this podcast in an episode a few years ago. He wrote a remarkable book following the Great Recession of 2008-09 entitled The End of Growth, Adapting to Our New Economic Reality. The final chapter is loaded with things people are doing to adopt practices of One Earth living and economics measured by well-being, not growth. He is senior fellow at the Post-Carbon Institute and continues to share the wisdom of that think and action group in his newsletter. He cleverly calls it a Muse letter, and it's on his website, richardheinberg.com. Check it out. Well, in the April 2020 Muse letter number 326, he has a section called Fraying Food System May Be Our Next Crisis. Here's his summary of flaws in the current system. I'm quoting him, experts who study what makes society sustainable or unsustainable have been warning for decades that our modern food system is packed with ticking bombs. The ways we grow, process, package, and distribute food depend overwhelmingly on finite, depleting, and polluting fossil fuels. Industrial agriculture contributes to climate change and the results in soil erosion and salinization. Ammonia-based fertilizers create dead zones near river deltas, while petrochemical pesticides and herbicides pollute water and air. Modern agriculture also contributes to deforestation and biodiversity loss. Monocrops, huge fields of genetically uniform corn and soybeans, are especially vulnerable to pests and diseases. Long supply chains make localities increasingly dependent on distant suppliers. The system tends to exploit low-wage workers, and food is often unequally distributed and even unhealthy, contributing to poor nutrition as well as diabetes and other diseases. Close quote. Heinberg emphasizes the problems are multiple. So let's run through quickly what he calls the food system's wicked complexity. Let's go through just five of the links that are breaking down currently in the food supply chain.
Now these five give us a big picture of what corporations and globalization have been creating in recent decades. And later on, we're going to give you specific choices that we can make locally to create a different picture entirely. But the picture we have right now is the one that is created by corporations, by neoliberal economic policies, which have given us globalization. So the first of these five that we note is that food workers are really vulnerable. Now, in a healthy food system, we would make sure that workers have what they need to assure their health and well-being. When workers are subject to poor management or to discrimination, to inadequate wages and health care, the food will not get to who needs it when a pandemic or famine happens. That's what's going on right now. And there's a huge irony here, because the White House has said that food workers are essential. And at the same time, that same White House has tried to get rid of undocumented people. Well, many of these essential workers are also undocumented workers. So there's a tragic irony going on there.
Yes, it would be funny if it wasn't so sad, Lee. Number two is fragile distribution networks. Often we hear that plenty of food is being raised, but market forces and other distribution issues aren't getting it where it is most needed.
So the third place of the breakdown in the food system is the global supply chain, multiple global supply chains. Globalization that was lauded in recent decades because it made things so much more efficient, but it's made millions more vulnerable to low food supply and hunger. Localization, which is the antidote to globalization, is gaining momentum as the better way forward, and it's a way that we take charge again of our food supply chain.
Number four is bankrupt farmers. Well, farmers show incredible adaptability to natural forces, but when they must depend on volatile global markets for income, it's often too much. And a pandemic, way too much.
The final place of breakdown that we're going to look at just briefly is vanishing affordability. So for decades, this country has paid a lower percentage of income on food than is true in many parts of the world. But averages are misleading. And all along, there's been many people who have had to make choices between food and health care or food and rent. And so now in this pandemic, that number just skyrockets. So let's turn to some of the solutions that Richard Heinberg suggests. We'll follow those with the better choices we can make in our community so that we come out of this pandemic with some better food supply structures. That's a real possibility, and that's why we're creating this episode, to facilitate, to encourage, to mobilize one another for better food supply structures coming out of this pandemic.
The first is growing more of our own. During wars and global downturns, many people respond intuitively by growing more of their own food, and that is exactly the behavior emerging during this pandemic. Local plant nurseries are seeing runs on topsoil, seed potatoes, plant starts, and veggie seeds. Baker Creek Seed Company, one of America's top suppliers of heirloom organic seeds, ran out of stock in mid-March. And Oregon State University's spring Master Gardener class, which usually sees 150 to 250 applicants, was inundated with roughly 25,000 requests.
Now, the second solution that Heinberg proposes is rationing. Now, that surprised me when I read it. But stay with Heinberg for a moment. He says, at the national level, food price controls have an uneven history of success. However, as Stan Cox details in his indispensable book, Any Way You Slice It, The Past, Present, and Future of Rationing, rationing has often worked wonders to stabilize food supply systems. Just one example, the British people were better nourished under food rationing during and immediately after World War II than they were prior to the war or in subsequent decades. The United States rationed during both World Wars and continues to do so. Well, that surprised me. Where is the U.S. rationing today? Well, it's in the Supplementary Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, also known as food stamps. Well, it's essentially a national rationing program for low-income people. Of course, what we need is a rationing program for high-income people as well. But food stamp enrollment, listen to this, has erupted since early March. In just 1 week, California saw nearly 100,000 new applicants for its SNAP outlet, which is called CalFresh.
The third solution he recommends is shortened supply chains. We must redesign the relationship between food producers, processors, retailers, and consumers so as to shorten food supply chains and create more slack in the system. Large centralized systems are touted as efficient, but often they are instead fragile. We need a food system that is anti-fragile, to use a term coined by Nassim Taleb. That requires decentralization and more localization, which would entail the buildup of many more small to mid-sized farms and the facilities to process, store, and sell the food grown on those farms. This is the opposite of what has happened in the decades since World War II. We used to have many small and mid-sized farms, but they went bankrupt or were bought out. However, we need, somehow, to make sure they can survive and thrive. And we must prioritize food production methods that use a minimum of fossil fuels, that capture atmospheric carbon and sequester it in the soil, that build healthy and biologically rich topsoil, that deliver nutritious and affordable food, and that are fair to farmers and farm workers. For better or worse, this is likely to be a historic moment of change for our food system. Events may take us in one or another direction. If big existing players in the food industry are first in line for bailouts and use the crisis as an opportunity to gobble up their smaller competitors, we could soon find ourselves dependent on a food system that is even more consolidated and deregulated and even less resilient in the face of future disruptions. On the other hand, government, producers, and consumers could use the crisis as an opportunity to address festering food supply issues and to refashion the system in a way that better meets everyone's needs over the long run. We all have a stake in the outcome.
Well, after letting Heinberg structure this episode, I want to take us into some choices. Some already have been suggested. I want to emphasize them. One is the local supply. Local supply is a way to get greater resilience and response levels in our food supply system. We need to use and search out our local growers, our local retailers, make sure we strengthen local markets. This is why the farmers markets are so important, because these are the local growers and they're the ones who will give us, keep things local. Our focus needs to be in communities instead of corporations. And this goes for supermarkets. Supermarkets are outlet stores for large industrial farming. If at all possible in your community, stick with smaller outlets. If there's a food cooperative, strengthen it, use it. Farmers markets, be sure to use it. If you can grow some of your own or be part of a community garden, do it. Local supply is just critical in this particular way of creating a new food supply system. The reader-supported news website gives us an article on young adults turning their grief at this time into action. Their grief has a lot to do with, it's not just the COVID-19, although it is that, but it's generally speaking, you know, what do they have a future? What kind of a future can they make in a world that is rapidly succumbing to the worst scenarios of climate change? Well, Anna McClurkin is one of these. She's a recent graduate of Michigan State University and is pursuing a career in regenerative agriculture and food systems. In part, she's doing this so that she'll be able to help her community in the food insecure future. She says, "We are consuming so much and going through so much every day, even in times of stillness like now. But having strong local community agriculture will make the whole system more resilient." Well, that's why she is working in regenerative agriculture. Pay attention to that. Permaculture. Pay attention to those sources, because those are the healthy ways of growing food that we want to support. And these younger generations, and this is Anne speaking again, she says, Anna says, on younger generations, including myself, are absolutely part of shaping the future. Well, another thing to really emphasize is to reshape all of our choices around our local community. Another really important place that we can make a difference in our food supply system is to reduce our use of meat. Now, maybe you're already vegetarian or on a low meat diet, but if not, can you imagine one dinner a week that isn't based in meat, or two dinners a week that isn't? We absolutely have to stop these drive-ins that are focused in burgers. Meat is driving industrial farmers into unhealthy practices. They're called factory farms for a reason. You know, on the day that a chick arrives in that farm, they already know the day that it will be sent for slaughter. Everything is mechanized. Everything is programmed. These are no longer animals. They're cogs in a factory. And this is the supply of our meat. And also, meat is pushing farmers to grow grains and more animal food than human food. And it's also pushing agriculture into habitats such as rainforests. And yes, that is in fact part of how we push into areas where viruses exist and can be released, as is the case with the coronavirus. So it's really important to reduce meat consumption, and tell your friends about it too. There's so much good food, so many good meals that we can eat that are not focused in meat. So be a low meat user, and then organic. I know these are not new ideas. But this pandemic has shown us the urgency of using these ideas. These aren't, oh, okay, if I feel like it, or these are not just auxiliary ideas. These are core behavioral ideas. So we must do organic. Industrial farming puts so much CO2 into the air, so many pollutants. Organic farming removes CO2 from the air. It does not use pesticides. It does not use herbicides. It does not use commercial fertilizers. It does not create dead zones. So make a point of using organic. Also, when we shape our lives around the local community and use the food co-ops and the local vendors, and we steer away from the large supermarkets, that way we don't structure our lives around the large corporations and the industrial agriculture, but we structure it around the systems that will get us into the future. Another source for great information is the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas, where they're really reconfiguring farming. I was listening to a webinar. I was on a webinar there with a panel a week ago, actually, and it's just so good what they're doing. Several things they emphasize around our food supply system, around agriculture. One is to stop thinking that economic growth is good. Anytime you hear, oh, let's get the economy growing, or oh, the markets are up today, or oh, become conscious of how we assume that growth is good. Well, in fact, we now need to get to the place where we recognize that we live on a limited planet, a planet with limits to how much growth there can be. And it's not true that the best economy is one that is an economy based on growth. Ours is, and that's why it needs to change. And it's the kind of an economy that is pushing the food system into breakdown. Limits are what we need. Artists will tell you that they function creatively best within limits. Limits bring out creativity. The notion that there can be unlimited growth does not make us creative. It makes us cogs in an illusion. So we need to generate some real new thinking about this and create a consciousness. This is a big area for conversation and talk among one another. So let's get into those conversations and figure out how there can be a strong economy focused in well-being instead of gross national product and continual growth. We need to also disconnect food from fossil fuel use. That's another reason why local farming and why local food supplies are so important, because industrial farmers use an enormous amount of fossil fuels. And pesticides, of course, use fossil fuels. Commercial fertilizers use fossil fuels. And these are not a part of the small-scale farmer, especially if they're small-scale regenerative and agriculture farmers. Another thing the Land Institute does, and this is a real breakthrough, is they are developing perennial crops. A perennial crop works like this. You get a crop going and you harvest it, and then the next spring you don't have to re-sow anything. It just grows up again. It's modeled on the prairie that we broke up with the plow years and years ago. This perennial crop idea is regenerating that model of the prairie. So here's an example. One of the grains that is now produced by the Land Institute, and others are doing this because it's being brought to marketable scale, is Kerenza, K-E-R-E-N-Z-A. There are now, I think it's Cascade Farms product, has a Kerenza grain cereal. There's an ale, long root ale, that uses the Kerenza grain in brewing this ale. It's called long root because the perennial grain has a root three times or longer than an annual grain. So the whole idea of perennial crops in the Great Plains is, in fact, an enormous breakthrough, and it is developing and growing. And the other thing that the Land Institute emphasizes is that to really get to develop the localization as opposed to the globalization, we need to really resettle small farms and small towns. Now, we don't need to do this because it's nostalgic and it's bringing back the past. No, it is the creative way forward because Homo sapiens function better as communal beings, whereas in larger cities, we lose the sense of community. Everything is individualized. And so the smaller farms, the smaller towns, create a whole new relationship with land, with people, with species, and are a big emphasis of the Land Institute. Now, Fridays for Future Europe has been another very generative source of change. It was started actually by Greta Thunberg and others. The now 17-year-old who has such a fire in her for addressing climate change. And there's a headline about a week ago in the Common Dreams website, Fridays for a Future Europe calls for transforming agricultural policy to tackle the climate crisis. And they just talk about if they could just have production and consumption of animal products, it could reduce emissions by 40%. So they're talking about that as a goal in Europe. This is something that has to be done. These emissions can actually be returned through the right kind of farming, because peatlands and soils will fixate the carbon, as I've mentioned in organic farming. So the soil is as an ally in tackling the climate crisis if we will use the right kind of farming, the right kind of food production. So that's an important emphasis now by Fridays for Future Europe, calling for transforming agriculture policy to tackle the climate crisis, which shows the interdependence of all these crises. In many ways, it's one big multi-dimension crisis that we're facing and living in this decade, and that we have only this decade really to make significant changes in. And then just want to mention what a congregation is doing. I think it's in Raleigh, North Carolina, where it's the Raleigh Mennonite Church, and they go through dumpsters where food waste is put. It's called waste, but lots of the food is still completely edible. And so the members of this 75-member church have organized, visiting the dumpsters in their community. They go at night, and they remove what they can. They say, you know, it's easy to practice social distancing in a dumpster because you're the only person in it. And they get some very edible food, and they redistribute it to the people in their community who really, really need it. So this shows how the current food supply system has built in pockets of huge, huge waste, and that a localized food system is able to get rid of a lot of that waste. And this church group is exposing that breakdown in the food system and turning the waste into wonderful food for redistribution to those that the food system isn't getting it to. Well, then, finally, just to summarize these comments, the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement have a website that right now reads, "The Food and Farm System We Need and Deserve." That's their headline, and it's a webinar series. It's the name of a webinar series they're having. The COVID-19 pandemic, it says on their website, has highlighted the huge cracks in our highly consolidated industrial food system, proving it's far less resilient than the diversified regional operations it replaced. Now more than ever, it's time to transition to a food and agricultural system that works for everyone, for farmers, for workers, for eaters, and the land. Our food and farm system belongs in the hands of more diverse base of farmers and workers, not under the control of a small handful of giant corporations. So that's an excellent summary of what this episode is talking about. And the episode that we've been creating here and talking with you about, the webinar, by the way, we'll put it in the show notes. There's videos made of that webinar and of all four of the webinars in the series, so you can see them when you are able to schedule it if you'd like to. Well, Jerry, take us on out from here.
Indeed, and I had the pleasure of interviewing a representative of CCI in a previous episode. Well, have you listened to our recent episodes? In March, Dave Gardner talked about three major efforts he has developed, all designed to bring change from the present. One is called Growth Busters, the second, World Population Balance, and the third, the One Planet, One Child campaign. In April, we shared some of the most thought-provoking interpretations of the pandemic. We called it Coronavirus, a devastating natural disaster with a message, live differently. In May, we had Life with COVID-19, Heading Toward a More Ecological World. Well, do listen. We're sure that you'll pick up thoughts you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. Well, please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Well, time to wrap up this episode. You can subscribe to this podcast under the name Simple Living Works at your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.
Simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.